This is the Pregame Engineer Tug Nightmare Racing Podcast, episode number 251. It's Tuesday, July 7th, 2020. I'm Tug Nightmare Rusty Wallace, and I'm in the PTM Podcast studio with Pregame Engineer Andrew Sherwin. What's up, dude?
This is weird, almost.
It is. It's been 16 weeks, and here we are. We're keeping our distance, y'all. Everything's cool.
We are 6 feet away.
We had such a special show tonight, and a special guest and everything. We couldn't stand not being apart from each other for this one. Can't wait to get it to you. You know what the deal is before we do. That's the podcast sponsored by you. That's right. Go to patreon.com/PTM. Join them. What's your drink club for as little as $1 a month? Get that free koozie. Best part is every cent this year we're once again donating to sponsoring drivers. So join the PTM posse today. Be a part of the sport you love. This week's show brought to you by our official sponsors at that $5 and up per month level. Those are Aaron Burton, Robert Kemlinger, Coleman Fan, Eric Kevin, Ryan Keeper, Patrick Clear, Jeff Brown, Granite Crow, Kathleen McDonald, Stacey Ryrie, Brandon Carl, Rico Porter, Jumpy Bob Lesmo, Julie Boss, John Pearson, Eddie Gruther, Younger Motorsports, David Mullins, Patrick Johnson, Brett Morris, Crystal Smoke, Fred Rosado, Chad Nappin, Stacey Coleman, Lisa Janata, Rick Houston, Sarah Ann Barry, Evan Roller, Brad Harrison, Matthew Bishop, Matthew Camper, Harry Bolzonia, and Evan Jones. Woo!
Damn, that's a nice list.
That is, that's a list you want to be on, man. That's, you know, prestigious right there. The PETM Posse, thank you so much for joining in. If you can't tell, we are super excited about our guest tonight. Y'all, he is a college football Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, Gator Bowl MVP, NCAA quarterback of the year, ACC player of the year, Heisman Trophy runner-up, Georgia Tech alum, co-host of the Home Team and Hamilton radio show, number 14 in your programs, but number one in every Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets heart, from Alvin, South Carolina, Mr. Joe Hamilton. Joe, what's happening?
Man, I'm doing outstanding. What an intro. I feel real honored. I feel real honored about that, but I'm doing outstanding, man. I'm doing safe, being safe. Family's doing well. Can't wait. I don't want to be around negative Ned talking about, you know, why we wouldn't have, you know, NASCAR going forward, baseball going forward, football going forward. I understand protocols in the CDC, but man, I'm looking forward to sports. So I'm doing spectacular, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
Man, we are talking to Joe Hamilton, one of our late teens, early 20s heroes right here. So we're fawning and fangirling a little bit. Joe, we do start this show off the same way every time, though. We got to ask you, what are you drinking tonight?
Man, I'm drinking some little bit of Uncle Nearest. Uncle Nearest Brown, a little neat. I drink it neat. No ice, just a little hot. Uncle Nearest, dark liquor. Old founder, I've been on the Uncle Nearest about three months now, and that's what I drink every night when I come home. And I, you know, sometimes, fellas, I think I deserve it. I know I don't, but after a long day, I think I need a little, you know, dark brown liquor on the rocks, or neat, excuse me.
Yeah, well, you just won our hearts again.
I think old Uncle needs to send you some cash, because he's going to at least sell two more bottles here very shortly.
I'm going to buy one tomorrow. I'm headed to Total Wine tomorrow.
Shout out to Uncle Nears. He doesn't know that I'm a big, 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 big time fan. What are you guys drinking on?
Sherwin.
Jim Beam, White Label, and Coke Zero.
Yeah, yeah. We just our classic juice, if you will, here for the show.
A little caffeine to make sure we stay nice and lively during the show.
Yeah,
but brown liquor for
that,
sure.
If I was right there beside you guys, I would just say hold off on the Coke and just give me just a glass, and then we can fellowship the way we're doing. Over the phone right now. I can't wait. Maybe one of these days I join you guys in the little basement and a little get together in the little mobile studios that you have, and we chop it up live here when we get on the other side of COVID-19.
Man,
absolutely.
We'll take you up on that every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Right. I mean, we may even be able to, between you and Rusty's wife, who works for Georgia Tech, we might be able to figure out how to do one from Bobby Dodd Stadium.
Well, there's that too. There's that too.
Yeah. Yes, we cannot leave that opportunity. We cannot leave that opportunity on the table without trying to find out a way that we can galvanize, restore, get this momentum, continue to promote the Institute and all that we can do. We would be remiss to miss that opportunity to just do all we can. Maybe not come to anything, but do all we can. In my opinion, you talk about bleed, gold and white, you know, yellow, everything, man. I am all for it. All for it.
Well, I know you can't see us right now, Joe, but I've got my I'm a Yellow Jacket on Saturday and an Atlanta Falcon on Sunday shirt on, and Rusty's got a Georgia Tech shirt from, is that the Gator Bowl, the Chick-fil-A Bowl?
Chick-fil-A Bowl, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you're talking about bleeding white and gold. I mean, we didn't wear the uniform, but we definitely bleed white and gold.
That's for sure. Joe,
you guys will get the best out of me in this, you know, hour or however long we chop it up and talk about everything. Because I'm a little looser when I can, you know, get out my feelings with, you know, techies, homegrown Yellow Jackets, and I don't have to, you know, try to sugarcoat it and, you know, soften it up. You know, we don't hide behind anything. We are Yellow Jackets. We are the Institute. And anytime we get a group of us talking, yeah, I just feel more comfortable, and we can, you know, stand on our tippy toes and poke our chest out because we are an Institute.
That's right.
You know, when it comes to just about every other situation, I am open to an open conversation, to hearing every opinion, and to accepting things and to listening. However, I am totally in for a Georgia Tech echo chamber among three
right
folks here.
On the echo chamber on Silo Island of Georgia Tech.
Absolutely. Joe, we told you before we started the show, we're two Georgia Tech alumni. We started in the late 90s, early 2000s, attended the Gator Bowls we talked about with your accolades, longtime season ticket holders. And every time we walk into the stadium, which is, you know, six, seven times a year, we see your name on that Hall of Fame banner sitting there next to Bobby Dodd, John Heisman, Calvin Johnson, and others. What does it mean to you to see your name up there?
That cannot be erased. You know, that no matter what happens, no matter, you know, if things get torn down or something catastrophic happens, my name will be embedded up in, you know, Bobby Dodd Stadium at the historic Grant Field. And the most enthusiastic I've ever been is when I realized that I was going to get into the Hall of Fame, because obviously your name is not up there unless you're in the College Football Hall of Fame. And my teammates, that's what gives me chills. It gives me chills as I'm talking to you guys right now, is that as soon as it was announced, my teammates called, we made it, we made it. Man, did you see that? We did it. And I'm all of a sudden knowing that this is one of those individual accolades, but all of a sudden my teammates calling back and acting like they are in with me as well. It was a tremendous feeling. That's what it means, especially as a quarterback, the position I play, when you give tough love, when you lead. You don't quite know if you're loved by all, and you try to lead a certain way, ultimately just to win. But when you know, you rub some folks good, you rub some folks bad, but they all know it's for one ultimate goal, and to come back, you know, many years later to see some appreciation from your teammates. That's what it means. And for my son, you know, just the legacy of the Hamilton name, it means a lot. And I tell you guys, more so than it means that, the most thing I've ever accomplished on the football field, and people would ask me all the time, what's your proudest and greatest moment of playing a game of football? And I would always go to my years at Tech and saying that I have never, ever, ever, ever got a negative on effort. Never, ever. In practice, games, whatever the situation, in workout, sprints, a negative. Yes, I've thrown four interceptions in the game, made a lot of mistakes, lost some games, played poorly, but never, ever, ever would you question my effort. And, you know, I think that's what the end of the day, that it meant how I played the game, and with the ultimate respect and the reward. You know, that's why I, you know, say a lot, the reward for doing some things that way and never leaving anything out there. And it seems to be, you know, being able to be honored to go into the Hall of Fame.
You know, Sherwin, I think if you walk into Bristol Motor Speedway, you'll see all those names across the top. And I think we've talked to a few of them on this show. And if you walk into other places, you'll see those names. But there's not a single other place where we go and we see the names like we see at Georgia Tech and at Bobby Dodd Stadium. And to think the next time that I walk in there, I'm going to look up and I'm going to go, old Joe Hamilton, yes, sir. Me and him, hey, we're brothers.
My goodness, it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling, man. And again, just don't pinch me. Because again, you never play for those things. You never play for to be beside some of those names and a part of history in college football. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, if you play the game the right way and let it sort itself out, it turns out a good way. It turns out positively, you know, no doubt about it sometimes.
So if there's something that we love to do here, it's telling stories and reliving some of our old moments. I'm sure that you've been asked this a million times, but help us relive. We know from the Gator Bowl aspect, you go down to Jacksonville, you know, we were party college kids back then, right? So we knew, yes. Go out to the landing, drink way too much, and you know, not tell your parents where you're at, and go to the football game next day, watch Joe Hamilton score a million touchdowns, and beat the crap out of
him. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, yeah. So how about from the flip side? And maybe this is a perspective, whether or not the folks here have already tuned out, I don't know, but I think this is something that people would love to hear, is from the flip side, from your perspective, what is that weekend like? How does it start? How does it progress through that?
Well, you get down there, and the grueling time before you go to a bowl game is while you're at your facility, while you're practicing and getting honed in on next year and making sure the young guys get acclimated or up to speed. You know, some coaches will tell you that's an extra spring practice to be able to practice before you get down there. So the game planning is somewhat in. But then when you get there to the landing, there's festivities, there are activities for you to do, mandatory, not mandatory. And we, too, enjoy that. It's almost somewhat what somebody would say, you know, Super Bowl week. We, too, would try to go to the parks or go out a little bit and have some, to the racetrack or what have you. Some of this is for team-oriented. Some of this is just getting a cab and going and seeing of age to maybe have some beverages and things like that. Until it winds down to game time. And when it winds down to game time, then you want some leaders to echo what the coaches are saying. Get in at night. Make sure you're in your playbook. Make sure you hydrate. Make sure you look over your plays every now and then. And not every now and then, envision what you're going to do on game day. Because we've always said, and I always said, that you don't want to be the person that came down there and enjoyed yourself and ended up not enjoying yourself. So, and then game day, when game day comes, especially the Gator Bowl against Notre Dame, when that came, that game plan that Coach Ralph Tweedon had, he laid out, and we felt and we bought into it. You know, I know coaches always would say players play and players win games, but Coach Tweedon and what he, every call that he seemed to make, every check that he seemed to have us in was the right check. Man, he was prepared, and we were as well. I caught my first touchdown, my only touchdown in my career, in that game, but to say we were prepared is an understatement, and we also had fun just like you guys did as well.
Yeah, well, so I'm glad you already brought up Ralph, because I promised a friend of ours who's a big Maryland Terrapins fan that would get you to talk about
they
Ralph.
They did him wrong. They did Coach Region really, really wrong up in Maryland.
Yeah, they did. I agree with you. but, boy, was he – so much fun. I mean, you know, we just going back and watching all the videos. The last video I watched was you echoed a lot of the sentiments that were in it. Of course, there's a ton of highlights, but I can remember the video that they did about the 1990 season, and Ralph and George were still just assistants back then, and talking right. about, you know, talking about Sean. And so I don't know. This is probably not in the show sheet, and I'm probably distracted, Rusty, again.
No, have at it, man.
But you know, I kind of always felt like you were Sean, but you were a better passer in a lot of ways. Is that your perspective?
Yes. Well, I think Sean can make all the throws. I think Sean, you know, did what was asked of him, and Coach Friesen would always put you in a situation there where your talents can come out. I tell you, he would say, and I've said to him, I think we were at the spring practice when the Legends of the Flats came back, Coach Collins' first year, last spring. And we kind of joked about it. I would love to have an open competition the way Coach Friesen and the way Coach O'Leary do things, that where, you know, there's no favoritism. One guy might get the starting, first team reps this day, the other guy that day. I would love to see what I matched up with Sean Jones, who came out with a battle like that. I just thought it evolved a little bit. Coach Friedman evolved a little bit. I watched Sean Jones' film. I watched things where the weapons around Coach Friedman he had and around me somewhat different, you know, somewhat different from Sean Jones. And I was a very competitive that's how I would, you know, introduce my style or tell somebody about my style, my passing style. I was a competitive passer. Man, so you wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, oh, Joe Hamilton, he's a pure passer. He's going to light you up for 500. He's going to pick you apart. No, I wanted to hit that deep out. I wanted to hit that five-step plant, throw speed out. I wanted to be able to hit a tight end over the middle. I wanted to be able to hit all those things because, you know, at my stature and my size, it's kind of you don't supposed to be able to hit those, or you don't supposed to be able to have the playbook open, so to speak, to those plays. And speaking of my really good friend, Coach Ralph Regan, he knew it really hurt me, and it really upset me for him to ever have a play that he would say, I can only call this play when Goose is in there, George Gotti, or you can't run this play. I would love to call this play we got from another team, but you wouldn't be able to execute it. He knew that would turn me, and I would, the next time he saw me, or the next time he thought about it, that play would never come up the way I couldn't play or couldn't execute it, and that's the way he was.
That's awesome.
Do you still keep up with any of those guys, any of the old teammates or coaches?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Joe Burns, Coach Gossie down in Miami now, doing his thing. Brent Key at Georgia Tech now. Sean Gregory. Will Glover at Tech now. Yes, all of them. Charlie Rogers. Yeah, Dante Booker. You know, yes, absolutely. And just, you know, checking up, seeing what's going on. You know, always checking the climate of Tech. And we're Tech people. You know, we're not going to leave. And I've always said that, you know, never shrink your shoulders. Never, you know, almost act like we're not Tech. Even though we're not winning now, we are Tech. So don't ever lose that. So we're the ones who have to carry that. And then when we eventually get some things turned around, we're going to still be Tech and then some. But I talk to those guys all the time, all the time. And Coach O'Leary and Coach Regan. You know, I'll probably see one of those guys or maybe both of those guys before the summer is out down at Lake Oconee. Both of those guys have a house on the lake at the Lake Oconee.
Oh, man, we're fixing to head to Lake Martin here in about a week and do some lake stuff, too. There was something you brought
fishing?
No, probably just putting on a life vest like a diaper and drinking beer.
Okay, okay, I understand that too. Yep.
Yeah, you know, you and what an all-star cast of folks to keep up with, to be a fly on the wall in the Oconee lake house there. But you mentioned, I'll tell you one thing you mentioned earlier, and listen, we were big supporters of Coach Paul Johnson while he was through, and I actually have other things to talk about that here a little later. But you mentioned you had said it in passing, tight end passes, among all the rest of it. I believe this past year, you know, the first time seeing a tight end pass in probably, you know, 8 years or whatever.
Ten years.
And me and Sherwin looked at each other. We're in the stands and high-fiving and hugging each other going, that was a tight end pass. I can't believe it.
Yeah, we just screamed out tight end. Like, it's back.
Yeah.
it is back. And, guys, it's going to be back even faster than we can think. Why? Because recruits want to hear that I can come in right away and I can make an immediate impact. Recruits want to come in and hear that tight end room is not that deep. You only have three or four in that room, and of those four, they're inexperienced just like you. So the opportunity to come in, make your name, play, and again, rebuild, get Tech back, brand to where they need to be. And I would like to share some things that – one thing that a lot of people don't remember, I know they know, but don't remember about when I came to Georgia Tech. I decided to come to Georgia Tech, and they were 1-10 the previous year. Mm-hmm. In 1994, 95, they were 1-10. So I knew with the Homer Rice and the Total Person program, what he screamed with which a lot of colleges, you know, that's the book they hand out. That's what, you know, the whole, you know, pamphlet they use as far as what they want their program to look like is what I came to Tech about. Now, they were lacking a little bit. 4 years removed from a national championship with the athletics, but it was socially, you're going to max out. Athletically, you're going to max out at the highest level. And then again, athletically is all about who you come in there, who gets in there, and how you can win. So, and that's what I think is coming to now as far as what we're seeing now. It's going to always be the players that's going to make Georgia Tech be and fulfill the athletic part. And the other part is going to sell itself.
Yeah, so there's something I wanted to ask you about Jeff, because I know you got to spend, I guess, what, your redshirt freshman year with him?
Well, he was on the staff when I was a senior. He was on the staff when I was a senior. I
okay.
was leaving when he was GA. Yeah, I remember his intensity, you know, trying to get the scout team ready for us to practice. He was intensified. Yes, he was.
Okay, so I want to get your perspective on so Georgia Tech made an announcement today about what, you know, what the freshmen, what numbers they're going to wear. What is your perspective on Jeff Collins' process for assigning a single-digit number to a player based on their letter of request and the fact that he gave a freshman, who's, I think, a safety, a single-digit number?
Well, it's, I love it in the form of what you want to try to do is create competition. Create competition at its highest level. And not being all the way in to know exactly why that freshman got it or how he was able to earn it, I know he earned it. I know it wasn't given, because the minute something is given and a program is built on competition is king, it is built on above the line, giving your effort in everything you do, that you just don't give that away, because you'll lose a program. You'll lose your players. So that freshman did something this offseason in the virtual workout. He did something this offseason as far as encouraging his teammates or whatever goals that Coach Collin had to make sure that you got single digit. If you earned it, that freshman earned it. And what it'll do, it'll help permeate throughout the whole team that if you a guy that can play, if you a guy that grasps and know the tech way and where we're heading, and you're above the line, you are going to play. You are going to play, and then you're going to play, and we can't tell you that you didn't earn it. And that is only, in my opinion, that is what players want from a head coach, that you're honest, you're transparent, you're upfront. And I know the class matters as far as your red shirt, senior, red shirt, junior, or true freshman, but on the football field, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, so that I texted a friend of mine who's a UF grad, and he's a sponsor of our podcast that we read before you could probably even hear it. But I said, I don't know if this kid has got everything he needs to have between the lines to be a star, but getting number 7 tells me he's a stud between the ears.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes. Yes. So, yes, he earned it. That's exactly what I went to, because he had to have earned that. There is no way that Coach Collins in the second year will rebuild Brandon and setting a precedent of how you do things around the Institute, that you're just going to give that away to a freshman. There is no way. But I must say this, and not knowing details, the intricacies about it, but we have to wait and see if he's going to open the season up with 7. We hadn't even started, camp yet. Will he keep 7? Will he keep a single-digit number? Because you can have this going on to this phase of the off season that he has 7, and then even in the walkthrough stage, and then going on to the training camp stage, and he might not have that going into the first season when we line up against the Tigers of Clemson.
Yep, good point.
So, Joe, I have a picture of me somewhere, and it's on the day that I was born. And on the day that I was born, I was dressed in a little bitty shirt with Georgia Tech on it, with Buzz on there, and it was a Georgia Tech shirt. And that's because dear old dad was a Georgia Tech fan his whole life, mainly because his family was all fans of, that other school down the road, down 78 that we don't talk about. And he always rebelled against them a bit in that respect, and always went with Georgia Tech. So I had that shirt on when I was young. I was fortunate enough to... be interested in engineering and science and computer science, where I eventually got into. But the whole point of that is I texted dear old dad and said, "Hey, man, I'm talking to Joe Hamilton tonight." And, of course, he's, "Oh, my gosh, are you kidding me?" I said, "How about, if there's any questions you want me to ask him, let me know." And dad sent me, "Who are some of your favorite players, some of your favorite folks that you played with, that really stood out?" And maybe even morphing that question a little bit, I'd like to know, like, when you came in, who was the guy that you were looking up to? And as you were, you know, on your way out, who was the guy that you looked not down to, but you looked at and went, that guy's coming up?
Well, it's interesting that you said that or asked that question, because when I came in, Georgia Tech wasn't high on my radar to where I studied somebody or looked at anybody from afar. But when I came in, I just looked at the quarterback room, and there was Donnie Davis. Donnie Davis had went from being player of the year in North Carolina, matching up with Heath Shuler and I think Eric Zaire coming out as far as quarterbacks, national rankings. And he went from wide receiver, quarterback, then wide receiver, and then finally his senior year, he was at quarterback my freshman year. And just his poise and what he said to me is, make sure that I got my academics down. I did not listen, unfortunately, as far as getting your academics down and then going and play football instead of the reverse way, as far as, albeit football, let me get in the meeting room, let me still in the practice field, let me get better. I want to win a championship. I want to be the best I can be, and then academics is second, is what he was trying to tell me. And the reason why I think that resonates for me more so than anybody I looked up to is because throughout my whole time at Tech, I didn't quite realize that until my way out, until it almost was too late, that I realized that I was going to be going out of here Heisman runner-up, doing great things, All-American, you know, bowl games, and leaving without a degree. And I got registered. Oh, my goodness. And so at that point in time, I started to, even though I wasn't going to get my degree right then, I started to mentor those young guys to say, hey, man, I did it the wrong way. Even some of you young guys that followed me, and, I was kind of saying, just make sure the number one thing, you get to practice, and that was above all. I wasn't the best leader as far as examples of study hall, examples of making sure you ask questions in the classroom, don't skip class. So that taught me that I was able to mentor those guys and not let them fall in that same rut, because you can do both. I'm not talking about the people that left as a junior and didn't get their degree or anything like that. I'm talking about some that took school for granted and you had 5 years that didn't adhere to it or didn't take advantage of it. So, it was just that, not necessarily a particular person, but it was the words from Donnie Davis: get your education, make sure you are a student athlete, take advantage of everybody that's in a polo shirt, get their cards, keep in contact with them for after football, is what I kind of portrayed on my way leaving out. And now today, after I got my degree, 12 years later, after I enrolled at Georgia Tech, it's a good story that I can really tell and I'm proud of telling.
That's something really cool. Joe Hamilton and Calvin Johnson and so many others who've come back and continued their studies and got the degree. That's to me, that's super neat.
It is.
I tell you, it's a guilt trip, and not to prolong it too much, it's a guilt trip that I had, and it was a very, very good feeling when I finally got it off my chest, because it's the Georgia Institute of Technology. You talk about prestigious academic institute, the best, top notch, and all of a sudden now you went and played football and you considered as a football player. I remember coming in the football facility, the athletic association, the AA, and seeing some high guys or some big name guys that graduated, not necessarily athletes, and me being Joe Hamilton, I kind of shunned away. This is all during the time after I had played in the NFL, but I knew I didn't have my degree. So I kind of shunned away and hoping that I avoided conversation, even though they would want to talk to me. I avoided it because I know eventually that question would come up. And you got your degree right. You got your degree right. And you're not total that whole Tech experience until that. That's what Calvin Johnson, and that's what the guys that go back, the athletes want to feel, the Jarrett Jackson, those guys. Man, I'm complete. I played at a high level at the Institute and got my degree. I really fit in.
Well, you fit in better than me, Joe, because Georgia Tech told me to seek life elsewhere, and I ended up graduating from what's Kennesaw State now.
Well, it's a difficult deal now. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on that whole, it's a lot of pressure and sacrifice, but when you finally get out of that place, you know why they did what they did, and you know how well equipped you are.
Yeah, well, I hope to go back one day, but I did get, I think, a double master's in fraternity. So.
Oh, man. So, Joe, you've got the radio show now.
Yes.
You know, us, it's obvious talking with you that that you are a professional when it comes to radio at this point. And we are.
I don't know about that.
We are perpetual. You know, we celebrated, I guess unceremoniously, but 5 years now doing this show. And we go back, if you go back and listen to our first shows, I mean, total garbage content.
It was
total,
completely trash.
Total garbage in terms of what we, but we had the passion. That's the main thing. We had the passion there. I'm curious because misery loves company. What was your first time on the mic like? And how did you get to the point now where, you know, talking so smoothly about stuff, and again, it's stuff that we're still learning today because you know, sometimes we just completely
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that I talk and I sound smoothly, because I still think I am a total work in progress. Because right now it's only 2.5 years. You know, I've been on the radio, home team in Hamilton, 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, on the extra 106.3, and I'm learning every day. I'm learning every day. And just exactly what you guys just said, passion gets me by. I respect every opinion. All I will do is give you mine, and then I hear yours, and then we'll live to see another day. And it's all about fun. It's all about the yes. fact that, you know, still basement, man cave, barbershop, gas station, barbecue type talk that we all love doing. It's just that. And the minute we try to make it more than that is when I tend to not have as much fun, that, you know, it's an argument over opinion, and it's all of a sudden that I can't believe you would say this, or you can't believe you would say that. Sometimes that's not the true man cave talk. That's not the true barbershop talk. So I try to keep it that, you know, do my information. I love sports, and I've always told my wife and continue to tell my wife, what better job for me to tell her that I got to go down to the basement and work.
Well,
I have to go down to the basement and watch games and watch, you know, events, because, you know, poor me. I have to go ahead and watch this, you know, boxing match.
Well, you brought something up that struck a chord there, because you got a couple dudes here on the other side of this phone that are all about some barbecue. we're a couple green egg junkies.
Yes, sir.
So what,
guys? Oh my God! I'm sorry. You almost, it could be we can wrap the next 15, 20, 30 minutes up on, yes, when you excited me when you mentioned just barbecue, and I think you just was trying to blurt out green egg. I mean, but. Oh my God, I love it! And I tell you now, barbecue pit masters, I love the pitboys.com. I love to see them do their thing. And still, now I got a Primo grill here that, you know, I'm working with, but I am envisioned funny right now for the last, I think maybe my wife and I have been married for 17 years, at least about the last 10 years. All three, men day, birthday, you know, Father's Day, Christmas, whatever we get our gifts on, I've requested a big green egg. Because I want it. I want a big green egg so bad. And I've had grills, and I have the regular grills, and I'm a barbecue man, but I can't wait till I can land that. I'm talking about the tables on the side, the big boy, the cabinet. I can't wait till I can do that. Even sometimes when I'm on air, I just make sure I let them know, hey, or even a Komodo Joe, you know, even one of those guys. I just love it so much. The meat and a six pack, you know, Uncle Nearest, you know, what have you. And I'm going to work on that grill. Love it, guys. Love it.
You know, I think for me, barbecue is a great equalizer. Because I have pumped out back in the poor days, if you will, you know, just first starting out, and had this $50 charcoal piece of junk. It got rusted out and everything.
Texas Tower Smoker.
Yeah, the Texas Tower Smoker. I had some rocks that it would sit on so that it'd be level and everything.
Yes.
And pumped out some amazing barbecue. If you're worth $1 billion, My hand won't even be shaking sitting here to serve you that barbecue and go, I have you a taste of this, my friend.
Yes.
And so it doesn't matter if you've got the $1 million grill or if you've got the $50 rusted out sitting on rock smoker. You can put out something, you know, if you've got, this goes back to what we were talking about before, that passion and that eye for detail and stuff. It's something that I really have loved about barbecue, that everybody can get into it.
How many times have we dragged that old Kamado Joe I've got to the racetrack?
As many times as, so we talk about, we talk about a legendary time at Talladega Speedway. When it was pouring rain the entire weekend.
Oh, that was in with your Texas Tower smoker.
Yep, that was with my Texas Tower smoker out there, sitting out there in the pouring rain, and we just put some ribs on it. Sat in my truck for the better part of 8 hours, just sitting there.
It was 50 degrees in Talladega in May. It was awful.
And we made the best ribs that I've possibly had to date. I haven't been able to replicate them. I think it takes that humidity and that rain or something. There was some sort of rain dance that happened that day. And the gods smiled upon us and said, well, these boys have been through some stuff. We going to give them some good ribs to eat on.
I think so.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
That's outstanding. Man, that's outstanding. Because now, when you say that and you're saying sitting out 8 hours in the rain at Talladega and the best ribs, it's patience. Nobody can ever tell me about they can barbecue or they love barbecuing and they're going to tell me they want a quick fix or they don't have time. It takes time. To you know, whatever you do in the meantime, but you cannot rush good barbecue, and because you're trying to put smiles on everybody's faces, and that's the whole meaning of barbecue is fellowship to me.
Oh, I love.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. If I'm gonna do like an 8-pound bone-in shoulder, I'll put it on at I'll put it on at midnight.
Yeah, absolutely. And even before you put it on at midnight, it's probably been just resting and you know soaking and you know getting all the juices in probably for 2 days.
Well, so we'll tell you a little secret, Joe, that we learned along the way, and Rusty taught me this. Slather that thing in regular old French's yellow mustard.
Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong
with that. Before you put your rub on, and you know, use whatever rub you need that gets your flavor right, but what was that?
You're good.
Oh, okay. Sorry. But you'll never taste the mustard. But what it does is it breaks down the meat just a little bit more, and it holds on to the rub so that you don't really need to use olive oil or any other thing like that because it's already kind of – it's built in. So just lather that thing up in yellow mustard and then put your rub on it and then put it on the smoker.
Yeah, yeah. The mustard's a life-changer right there.
I wish you guys had a video over here because I just wrote that down because I'm adding everything. I'm adding everything to my arsenal, man. I'm telling you, that's some good stuff.
So besides hosting the radio show, you're also doing a lot of coaching right now too, coaching young quarterbacks and stuff. I want to know what is the biggest difference between quarterbacks today that are up and coming and say 20 years ago. What are folks focusing on more now or less now or whatever else that they're doing?
Athleticism, that's what, you know, you look for when you say that quarterback I can work with, that's the quarterback that if I had, in a perfect world, I want a quarterback that can run and pass. And not necessarily a running quarterback that can pass, but a quarterback that's mobile. So that can get, you know, the ball delivered on all platforms, that RPO, run pass option, throw on the run. To make up for the deficiencies sometimes, especially when you're young, high school, when you're young, college, and you don't have a really good offensive line, an athletic quarterback can really make up for a missing plays or I got you plays. So that's what you're looking for. But then again, you're looking for somebody that can get better. We're in a society now that if you don't come out looking like the prototypical and lighting up in the first year or have promise in your first year, then we write you off and we forget about coaching. We forget about the off season developing, you know, getting up at 5 a.m., doing what you need to do to make sure you max out as a player. We forget about that. And, you know, fortunately for all of us, Joe Burrow showed us that, you know, coming out of nowhere, coming out of not being drafted or a late round draft pick going into his senior year to where he is, getting drafted number one and doing some of the things he did in winning the Heisman Trophy. So, and not only quarterbacks, but then again, all positions, but specifically quarterback, you don't check some quarterbacks or most quarterbacks are not like Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes checks all boxes. I mean, I don't know if there's a box that he does not or did not or cannot check at all. But there are some quarterbacks that check maybe three or four boxes that you can work with.
Yeah, well, I don't – I've never seen an NFL quarterback throw a no-look pass.
No.
Right. Yeah.
Here's
it doesn't happen.
Especially over the middle.
Almost an offensive coordinator saying, oh, no, well, yeah, okay.
Exactly.
We ask a lot of our guests, obviously being a NASCAR show here, about their favorite tracks, and the tracks differ so wildly in NASCAR. Obviously, you'll have from a half-mile track or something less than half a mile all the way up to, you know, 2.5+ miles, depending on, you know, road course or whatever. And it's something that I've never thought to talk to somebody else or in the football realm about, because we have specific dimensions for a football field and everything. But I'm curious, Joe, from your perspective, what are some of the best places that you've played football at and the best either fields, stadiums, crowds, whatever it is?
Well, first would be on the list would be, you know, South Bend for me, mm-hmm. Fighting Irish. And the reason why I put that number one on my list, because I went there early in my career, very early as a redshirt sophomore. And I was shell-shocked. I looked around, and I was looking for Newt Rockne. I was looking for Touchdown Jesus. And, you know, I was looking for the lines in the end zone, because I'm a historian. I love college football. I knew all about Tony Rice and, you know, Lou Holtz and all those things. And it took me almost a quarter and a half or something like that to, you know, get into less than now. We got to play football. You can't sit here and be a fan. So that's number one. And then number two would definitely be Death Valley. We call the real Death Valley down in Clemson. That's a place where it gets loud. It's intimidating. They know the game. And when I say they know the game as fans, just when to be the loudest, when to disrupt you as a quarterback, knowing when the momentum is at its, you know, at hand and capitalizing on that. That's a crowd there to where as a quarterback, you have to go to 10 or 10 of your players and tell them exactly, absolutely exactly, to play individually, because otherwise they would not be able to hear you at all.
Yeah, I love Death Valley. My dad's a Clemson alum, so I have a little bit of
some affinity
there. And we've been there, I think, 3 or 4 times to watch Tech play. Actually, that was the first college football game I ever went to. It was in, I think, 1989. Was Georgia Tech beat Clemson like 13-10 or 10-7 or something like that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, having been there, I would totally agree in the crowd factor. And the crowd is competitive but friendly too. And that's something you don't see everywhere, you know, that me and Sherwin venture to.
Yeah, damn sure not down the road on Highway 78.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Yeah. So, that's fun. You know, so Joe, one thing that we kept bringing up back when Coach Paul Johnson came onto the scene, and we knew what he was bringing. We knew what to expect. We're going to be running triple option. There was a lot of people I felt like were shocked about, oh my gosh, we're going to change everything up. It's something we've never done before. And the first thought that all of us had was that had been around a while, we go, well, old Joe ran that every third play, it seemed like.
Yeah, you guys, when you ran some version of the wing T when you were there,
yeah,
didn't you, Joe?
Absolutely, I did. Absolutely, I did. And not only did I run some of that, it was implemented again. And I don't want to beat a dead horse or put some things where it's not in perspective. Coach Ralph Friesen. Mm-hmm. Coach Ralph Friesen would end up in a 4-wide set and all of a sudden end up in the wishbone and his wing tee and then have you in a shotgun. He would do all those things. But I love running the option. And again, it goes back to a lot of people, you know, guys, always ask me or was asking me, what I love to play in the Coach Paul Johnson offense. How do I think I was doing this offense? Would I still go to Georgia Tech if, you know, Coach Johnson was the coach? Man, I'm a football player. Like I said earlier, man, I'm going to run the play, coach, Just call it, and if it's working, let's go win ball games.
Yeah, well, Paul Johnson's offense always reminded me of Coach Herman from Remember the Titans. I run six plays, ice cold, baby. You know, I mean, I have a very vivid memory in my mind of you sprinting out to the left and getting absolutely murdered by a linebacker, but you had already pitched the ball to Charles Rogers, and he was ghost.
Oh, it was
– He was ghost.
It was always the same thing, man. And my dad would point it out, and it's to your point, Sherman, that it looks like a sack every other play on earth, and a sack for like the last 2 seconds, but the ball's gone, and it's gone to the right person that was totally intended for this play. That was something that we always looked at, that nobody ran that like Joe ran that in terms of knowing exactly when to get rid of the ball. And yeah, we saw, like you said, ghosts, some takeoffs.
So how exciting was it? Sorry to interrupt you, Joe, but how is it exciting was it for you to watch Justin Thomas? Because he reminded me a lot of you.
Absolutely exciting. And what you guys were just talking about, you can give me credit for it, and I'll take a little bit of credit for it, but it comes with experience. It comes with, all of a sudden, you know exactly what this play is all about. Yes, you want to make sure that person that you're pitching off of, that he, you are going to absorb that hit, but you're not going to let him be in the pitcher as far as also making you pitch it and tackling the guy that's receiving the pitch. So that's a part of it, knowing the whole offense, whether it's throwing and dissecting defenses, throwing the ball, or in the option game, it's controlling the offense through the eyes of a quarterback. And Justin Thomas did it with the best of them because he was able to manipulate. He's able to feel you out, see how you're playing them, seeing what you would do when the going got tough, what different game plan is going to be to try to stop me. And that's what I like, guys. I like, you know, because quarterbacks at the end of the day, you know, when they're competing, I told James Graham, the quarterback for Georgia Tech, this, and I'll tell Jordan Yates, and I'll tell Jeff Sims and Tucker Gleason, all those guys, when you're trying to compete for a job, quarterback, if it's wide open, remember, if you go down the field starting at the 20-yard line and you don't even throw a pass, or you might have a incompletion or a bad, you know, percentage passing, but that team or your unit scores, that's one up for you as opposed to that next quarterback coming right behind you, and he does the same thing, and he has good numbers. He went 7 for 7. You know, he got in the red zone, and they don't score. You know, you're a quarterback that led an offense that scored. That's what they want. They want winners at that position. So don't so much get caught up in the stats and how you're getting it done. Are you getting it done?
Yeah, that's a great call. And I want some of the best advice I've gotten as a really terrible golfer is, you know, at being
join
asked
the club.
being asked the question of, do you want to be a good ball striker or you want to score well? And, you know, there's a right answer to that question. And it's absolutely nice if you got a pretty swing and the ball goes down there, but if you double bogey every hole, it don't count.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a beautiful swing, Sherman. You've seen my swing. I all the fundamentals of swing are down. Now the ball, who knows?
Yeah. So to your point, Joe, it's, yeah, if you don't ever throw a pass but you score a touchdown, good. I mean, I think one of the most exciting things that Rusty and I have seen over the past, you know, I guess through Paul Johnson's era was watching the A-back go out and get the linebacker and watch the right tackle seal off the other tackle and watch the wide receiver plant the corner and the safety be out of position.
Yeah.
And we're on the 25-yard line on our side, the negative side of the ball, and we're like
– And we're moonwalking from the 30.
We're throwing our hands up in the air and going, like, we're fixing to score a touchdown.
Isn't it a pretty thing, guys?
It's
thing. I totally agree. Watching that thing unfold, and when you know what you're watching, and you know the scheme, and you know why the play call was going on, it's not a prettier thing. It is not a prettier thing. And that's when you talk about execution. And that goes for me, that goes for to the quarterback, you know, putting those guys in the right position, leading the team to a score, bottom line. And I know we all get too much credit, but we also get too much blame.
Yeah, that's true.
So I want to ask you, you know, now that we've let the hair down, we've got a little of the brown in us now.
Yeah.
Tell, you know, maybe a little story or something about George O'Leary that he might not want, you know, might be a little embarrassed about.
Him or me?
Well, I'll go with either one then.
Well, it kind of has, I guess it kind of has something to do with him and I, is the fact that my senior year, and things were going pretty well, up to the hives and everything, Coach George O'Leary kicked me out of practice. He absolutely kicked me out of practice. And we were at the end of practice, and we were doing ones versus ones, offense versus defense, and this was number one offense versus number one defense. And this was supposed to be for who runs sprints. Whoever lost, the other side would run sprints. But we're dominating. We're getting third downs. We're getting first downs. We're moving the sticks. We're dominating offensively. And coach is not acknowledging it. He's not acknowledging it. He's blowing the whistle. He's almost like staging practice. I don't understand. So afterwards, he blows it up. You know, you know, offense runs. And I said, what? And I had a fit. And so, you know, he wasn't joking. So we ran one disaster, and I'm still talking, and I'm chopping up the bit. And he said, you know what, Hamilton? You prima donna, what are you doing? I said, coach, boom, boom, boom. I said, and then, you know, I ran one more, and I came back, and I'm still joined. He said, you still joined? Who do you think you are? Get off of the field. Get off of the field. So I went in, I jogged in, under the shade, got my cleat, walked back to, you know, the locker room. Got dressed, and after, you know, knowing that, afterwards, you're going to have to see him. You know, there's
right.
going to be a note for somebody. The coach is going to say, coach wants to see you. And when I got in the coach, I'm all worried because we all know he's my friend, but he's the Grinch. Because George O'Leary, we know he's the Grinch. And, you know, sit down and say, yeah, you know, they're proud of you, son. Proud of you. I said, well, what's up? Proud of you. Proud of the way you handled yourself out there. They're really, really proud. Now I know if I really need to rip you and set an example, I can. If you handle yourself pretty good. Now get out of here.
What do I do now?
Yeah, so that was one thing that I really, he was trying to get a spark. He was trying to use it. He glad I kind of stepped up for the team. And, you know, he knew he had to try to set an example and, you know, kick it and letting me know that I couldn't run the team and it's not my team, but also that he could be hard on me. And being hard on me, nobody else could really kind of, you know, you take the backseat to anything.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to talk a little shit.
No kidding. Yeah, yes, yes.
I'm going to throw this out there. You mentioned in passing going for the Heisman and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think you said it in four words there. But let's remind the folks, beating out Michael Vick and Drew Brees in Heisman votes that year. So.
Well, and you got screwed, by the way, because Ron Dane got the Ricky Williams Award.
We're bitter about that one.
Man, we're,
yeah. But I'm not bitter, guys. I'm not bitter about it, and I do understand what went on there. And, again, beating out Drews and beating out Vic, it's all icing on the cake. It's all icing on the cake mm-hmm. because, again, you can tell me 10 straight times that I'm invited down to the Downtown Athletic Club for the Heisman Trophy. And I'm not going to win it. Still, all 10 times with that experience I got, I'm going. I'm going. You know, at that point, you got down to it. You could have won. You should have won. I don't ever get it into I should have won because that's kind of subjective. And unfortunately, I always say when I'm trying to beat myself up in the mirror is that you can't lose to Wake Forest and then win the Heisman. You know, so because, you know, we did lose to Wake Forest up there that year. And that's why I always try to, you know, beat myself up with. But, again, that experience. And I tell you a quick story about Drew Brees and Mike Vick and Chad Pennington up there in New York, so competitive. This is where when we still had the ESPN zone, and that was up there, and that was one of the places we went and kind of hung out and shot a little basketball. And we stood there with the little football throwing through the hoop, you know, and timing how many you can get through the hoop in so much time. 4 hours. Me, Drew Brees, Mike Vick, and Chad Pennington, 4 hours competing. And eventually, I think we had to go eat, or they had another, you know, event we had to be to while we stopped then. And I think Drew Brees might have hit 57 in a row was the record. But, boy, it was a great, great time. So those are the memories I remember about that more so than, you know, finish ahead of Mike Vick or finish second or things like that.
So how hard do you think, like how fast, if there was a radar gun, how fast can Michael Vick throw a football?
Just like a fastball.
I mean, I would say probably 72, probably 73 mile an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about it, what's so, you know, amazing about seeing Mike Vick throw the football, we've never seen him unleash it. Because he was so natural and just a flick of the wrist, it would still go for 73, and he was just out there playing catch. Imagine if he reared back and gave one, you know, a piece of his footwork and sticking that back leg in the ground, what he would do. So, but amazing. Mike Vick, man, all-timer.
I'll tell you what, have you ever played catch with somebody who threw the ball a little too hard? Like, hey, we're just playing catch, man. What's the deal? I feel like playing catch with Michael Vick, I would just be really upset pretty quickly.
I think he broke Brian Finneran's sternum one time.
Absolutely. That was the only knock about Michael Vick with me as a football player and critiquing. You have to throw what they call a catchable ball. There's no need for a swing pass to be thrown like an 80-yard downfield. Yeah. I mean, just get a little touch where he can be. He is a running back. Give it to him where he can catch it a little bit. So, yeah. And then if you throw it that hard and you're not as accurate, then they can't make the tough catches for you. At least if you're throwing a catchable ball and then maybe a little bit behind them, it's a soft catchable ball instead of a rocket, you know?
Yeah. Well, so I don't know if you listened to Chuck and Chernoff yesterday, but they brought back the naughty numbers thing, and there's somebody from ESPN or CBS or something that did some numbers work, and if Aaron Rodgers went 0 for 151 in his next 151 passes and every single one of them was an interception, he still would have a better touchdown to interception ratio and passer rating than Brett Favre.
Wow, the Brett Favre.
Exactly.
Wow. I wasn't expecting you to end that conversation or end that statement with Brett Favre.
Right?
Wow.
That's wow. Yeah, they're numbers that can't be true numbers.
I mean, and you know, everybody knows about the gunslinger. I mean, he broke hands.
Yeah.
Like in practice.
In practice.
Yeah, and you know that's funny you guys said that, because I remember always in the opening meeting with Tampa Bay and Coach Dungy, every time he used to play, because that was a different division then, play Brett Favre twice, he would say when Brett Favre throws you one, because he will throw you an interception, he will throw it in your hands, you got to make sure you catch it. But it was difficult to catch it because it was coming like, you know, a rocket.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially for DBs.
Right, because the reason why they play DB is because they can't catch.
Well, I can't catch it if he throws it 90 mile an hour, Sherwin.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, man. Fellas, we do have to take our hats off. This week we lost Mr. Charlie Daniels. And to bring it kind of full circle here, I know that I saw Charlie Daniels play on New Year's Eve in Jacksonville. For one of those Gator Bowls. I don't remember which one or whatever it was. But, bummer. I think 82 years old, was it? Something like that?
83.
So, yeah.
Yep, the devil went down to Georgia and took old Charlie on up to heaven.
My man. Yeah, yeah. So, Sherwin, it's about time to wrap the show up. It's a NASCAR show, so we had the Harvick Hamlin show there at Indy. Kenseth came in second.
An elephant in the room that we need to address.
It was pretty good. Let's see, Daytona Road Course. If Watkins Glen falls through, that would be very interesting.
That. Same company.
Jimmy Johnson out for COVID. 663 starts in a row. And now, you know, misses his first one.
And if he,
who'd have thought?
You know, he might be outside the playoffs after the next race if, you know, things go better for somebody in front of him.
I feel like a waiver is in order
there. Yeah, he deserves an exemption.
Right.
Well, he's going to get the waiver, but the problem is you still have to be in the points.
Well, there's that. Here's something. Here's team standings after the Brickyard. This was another one of those things that I or numbers that can't be true. Penske, Gibbs, Stuart Haas, and then Hendrick. That's the team. Now, it kind of makes sense to me.
Those are the four. So, for Joe, that's like
that's the four horsemen.
Yeah. that's Alabama, Texas, Georgia. I mean, name another one.
Yeah.
Ohio State.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, I was surprised for that order that Penske is number one. With Kozlowski and Blaney and of course, Joey, I guess.
Yeah, they have four wins.
I think because Joey won those before COVID and before they came back and everything.
They kind of is weird.
Not that it doesn't count, but you kind of forgot. That it feels like a last season thing, but that's it's interesting to me. Joe, curious if you've been following along in terms of NASCAR, you know, first sport to come back at this point. How much are the other sports paying attention to that?
Well, a lot. You know, I don't know as far as the fans paying a lot of attention to it, but I know the executives, the higher uppers of ever other organizations, especially pros that are trying to restart their season, they're paying attention to the protocols. But me as a fan, NASCAR gains my viewership, and when I'm talking about just the Bubba Wallace situation,
they
gained it because I wasn't aware, or nothing really brought me to the game. And just like you guys were talking about the Four Horsemen, I know about the Four Horsemen. As a matter of fact, my favorite racer right now, driver right now, is Joey Logano. Love him ever since I watched that.
Right,
you know, especially on him when he was a real youngster growing up and how he came through the ranks and things of that nature. And I know about the Earnhardt Juniors and the Petties. I know about the history, but it's only Talladega or the big matches that I would watch, or maybe the last lap of a race and somebody said, you should be turning it. Or maybe I would go back and watch it because it was a photo finish or something like that. But with the Bubba Wallace and the removing of the Confederate flag,
mm-hmm.
all that brought my attention. And I'm not one to say the Confederate flag caused me not to be a part of NASCAR. It wasn't just something I was watching. It wasn't because of anything. I didn't know enough to say I'm not watching it because of this or because of that. But it was able to now, all of a sudden, Bubba Wallace and the movement of Black Lives Matter brought more attention, brought more awareness. And I understand, again, it's competition. There's science behind it, big money behind it. And, you know, also stand up people behind it that want to do the right thing. No brainer.
Right on.
No brainer.
Well,
so I'm all locked in.
Yeah, we love
it. It took my momentum from Monday watching the race after it got postponed to having missing a race, you know, since.
That's awesome, man. And like Sherman said earlier, we know you can't see us. I'm wearing a Bubba Wallace hat right now that was signed by Bubba himself, and I've got the picture when it was. So I've been a fan.
How long ago was this?
I've been a fan of Bubba since he came onto the scene.
Yeah, since he showed up, we've been all in on
just
some
really
Bubba
liked
Wallace.
His style. Just really liked his. You know, he's a big friend of Ryan Blaney. They grew up racing together and stuff, and just really latched on to really his attitude and his style and everything, and then got the chance to at a signing session meet him and have him sign this hat, and the hat, I know some people will take a signed hat and put it up somewhere and never wear it. I'll wear this every day. I don't care. But one thing that I take sacred is the picture that actually Sherwin took of me and Bubba shaking hands and stuff, and it was really cool. Me and him have the same last name, so hey, we're Wallace's sticking together.
Yeah, and I got you that
right.
Sticker.
Yeah,
one of our stickers signed by Bubba. Too Rusty.
There it is. Too Rusty, Bubba Wallace. Well, you can't really read that because, you know, celebrities.
It's chicken scratch. Have,
but we know it was.
I know what it was because I was there for it, and I got the picture to prove it.
That's right.
But, yeah, I know, Joe, we were very curious about whether or not you had any interest at all in this sport, and I hope that the things that are happening now would encourage you and your friends to get involved, because the reality is there are way more good people in this sport than there are bad, and it's the bad ones that make the news.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we absolutely love it, support and everything, and can't be happier. And hey, regardless of what some people might tweet, 46% more people watch Indy than last year.
Yeah. So. Wow. And so Joe, just from your perspective, this is my prediction, and I don't know this yet because we're not all allowed to go back to the racetrack, but I am firmly committed to the concept that the next time that we get to go to the racetrack, and we go to like five races a year usually, that we're going to see the most diverse crowd that we've ever seen.
Looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how it starts. It starts with everybody in more knowledge, listening. Why would I want to come and watch this? What's that all about? More intrigue, competition, the culture, you know, inclusive. That's what it's a sign of. And I've always wanted to be inclusive. That's on my bucket list. Actually, you know, my partner, home team Brandon Lee, he said that he went one time and was a great experience. I wouldn't mind experiencing it because at the end of the day, guys, I love the movement. I kind of love where we are in society for this simple reason that everybody can talk. I want everybody to cast their opinions. I want everybody to take a stance and just let everybody know what you believe in, you know, what you like and dislike. And then we all sort it out at the end. You know, you want to eventually be on the right side of history. You want to eventually be on the right side of treating people the way you know how to be, how you want to be treated, and doing those things. Why wouldn't I bring my guys? Why would I ask my guys if they want to go and watch a race? What would be the negative to that? Why wouldn't you? You know, maybe it's almost like when anybody get introduced, or for me, get introduced to golf. No, man, I don't like golf. Why would me? Why me? Why me? All of a sudden, I'm addicted. You know, so it's always being willing to listen and to get new ideas and hearing others. So they had one for me. They had a tiptoe, a halfway in, you know, with peekaboo at NASCAR a little bit. But now I'm engaged. And I can tell you about strategy, and I can kind of tell you about who's the favorite and why and what kind of car. So learning more information day by day.
Well, you got a couple friends who are NASCAR fans who bleed white and gold. So you lean on us.
Awesome.
We talked about it at the top of the show. We'll bookend it with this. I am here to listen. I am here to understand. And I am here to hear what's going on. Except my Georgia Tech echo chamber. Gentlemen. Joe, we're going to close you out, man. This has been an absolute blast, yeah. And we got to have part two at some point. It's been awesome talking with you. And a couple of, you know, I shouldn't say a couple, a trio of Atlanta folks here absolutely enjoying it. So we'll maybe, like we said at the top, meet you someday over down at Bobby Dodd.
Yes, I'm absolutely looking forward to maybe hanging out with you guys before game at Bobby Dodd, and maybe one day soon, and not burden you guys when we get on the other side. I'll take you guys up on an offer, if you guys offer, to go to an event.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll show you a NASCAR race, my man.
No
absolutely.
Doubt.
That's what I'm talking about. I can't wait, fellas.
Love it. Love it. Well, Joe, as if folks need to know, but why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and what's coming up next for Joe Hamlin?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at JoeHam14, also Twitter at JoeHam14. You can listen 9 and noon, Monday through Friday, to the Home Team in Hamilton show, Extra 106.3. And all we try to do is we infotain. We talk about a little bit of, not politics, but breaking news as far as the world, and we chop it up at sports.
Love it.
And, of course, Pro Georgia Tech and THWG.
My man. That's right.
My man.
Well, to hell with Georgia's what that means, y'all.
Well, Joe, we appreciate you so much being on and hanging out with us. It's been a blast, and we'll be in touch soon.
All right, gentlemen. Take care.
All right. Take
Thank
care,
you,
man.
Joe. Appreciate it.
Sherwin, with that, time for us to close this thing down. Y'all know what the deal
Can
is.
Can you run through the whatever the what do we call it? I don't
even know where you're going with it.
No. I know we missed some stuff, but
missed all kinds of stuff.
We got a race coming up, Kentucky. We got to make some
Kentucky.
Picks.
Okay, yeah, let's make some picks. Let me write it down here. Sure. So we all picked Chase last time, which you know is what it is. Let's see.
Yeah, they kind of got boogered up a little bit.
Yeah. Sherwin, why don't you give us your pick at Kentucky?
At Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
I think Kyle Busch is going to get his first win.
Ooh, I love that pick. Mile and a half track, cookie cutter, whatever you want to call it. But, man, it's that's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think, to your point, you're going to see the guys who have been run up front, the guys who are strong there. I'm going to go with Brad on this one.
So that's great. I mean, I was tossing in the back of my brain whether I was going to pick Blaney or Busch.
Yeah.
And so I just picked Busch because I've been a Blaney homer for a couple weeks now.
For a little while. So, yeah. But Brad Keselowski, I think it's I hope – you know, we texted about this. It's been the Harvick-Hamlin show for a little while. And I toe this line of – I really like to see greatness. I like to see this stuff going on. I would like to see another storyline. So I think that's what we're both kind of predicting, or whether it's prediction or hopeful, that we're going to see here at Kentucky with either Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, or it might be, you know, Harvick and Hamlin again.
Well, I mean, let's throw this out there in left field or right field or whichever field you like to call that thing. I say right field because most batters are right-handed, but the whole deal with Reddick, did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I don't know what his deal was with you're talking about the tweeting stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know why he, you know, went and deleted it.
I don't know why I don't know why he deleted it either.
Yeah.
But I'm glad he said it.
Yeah.
And y'all you can go figure out what it was. We don't have to say it on here.
Exactly. But what we will say on here is it's time to close it down. Sherwin, tell the folks where they can find you. And what's coming up next?
What's coming up next is you can find me at Pregame Engineer and at Andrew Will Sherwin on Instagram. And I am going to be on Lap Traffic next week.
Look out. That's right, folks. PETM will be taking our summer break 1 week off. But you'll find Sherwin on the Lap Traffic podcast next week with the professor himself, Brandon Crabb. Can't wait to hear that one, Sherwin, and all that come in. In the meantime, as always, I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace at Tailgate Mayor. You can find us, PETMPodcast.com, at PETMPodcast, and everywhere else that you can find your podcast.
PETM Podcast on Patreon.
That's right. We can't wait to talk to y'all soon. I'll be back in 2 weeks. You'll be able to hear Sherwin next week. We'll talk to y'all later.
Kenny Anderson's coming up, too. Now.